Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I'm going to read two verses this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 23, verses 9 and 10. And there's two speakers. First one is Maitreya, commenting on what happened previously, and then Devahuti speaking. So there's some persons who weren't with us yesterday. Little background so you can appreciate the context. We're in Satyayuga, deep in a forest, in the hermitage of Kardava Muni. Kardava Muni is one of the direct sons of Lord Brahma, and he has been living as the husband of the daughter of Swayambhu Manu, to very, very elevated personalities, and for tens of thousands of years, because Satyayuga life duration is much longer, tens of thousands of years, that's a long time, they've been living together as husband and wife and performing Brahminical lifestyle, Satyayuga quality, where meditation, dhyayate, process of meditation is the means of achieving perfection, and even before marriage of the two, Kardava Muni already was at such an elevated stage of spiritual consciousness that in devotion to Lord Vishnu, Lord Vishnu came directly before him, standing on the back of Garuda, and gave benedictions. He like basically told Kardava Muni what's going to happen next and next and next, and what your life is going to be, and that he, Lord Vishnu, knew the desire within the heart of Kardava Muni that he, Kardava Muni, would have this personality of Godhead as his son. He had such a Vatsalya Rasa aspiration. I think we talked about that when one of the times I was here. We discussed those verses, and whether that's a material desire or a spiritual desire to have a son, but it's not just have a son, it's have the Lord as his son. And is that a material? It's a spiritual desire. He was on such a stage. And Lord Vishnu, in addition, said, the mother of that child, or your wife, will be Devahuti. And, like, you know, that makes it a lot easier if somebody's going to become a house, or they hear from God who their wife is going to be. She's going to be here in 2 days from now with her father, Swayambhu Manu, and when he makes the marriage proposal, say yes, because it's going to be good, and I'll come as your son, and see you later when I'm your son. And he went. So they've been living, they were married in a proper manner. How that happened has elements that Prabhupada says this is ideal. In any case, living together as husband and wife in the forest, undergoing austerities, you know, like extreme austerities, in such a manner that Devahuti's body had become emaciated and her hair was in matted locks because she didn't have a comb and mirror. And just happy serving her husband. And so the yesterday's verse was, he was acknowledging with great appreciation her mood of devotion to her husband, and of course to the personality of Godhead, because she and he were great devotees. They were serving the personality of Godhead together as husband and wife. And he expressed that, I want to offer a gift. Not like a token, but like a gift. And the gift that I want to give is the greatest of all gifts, because any other gift that's of this world is illusory and temporary. Now you see it, now you don't gift. And it's insubstantial. So not one of those kind of gifts. Here's some bangles and here's some saris and thanks a lot. I want to give you the greatest of all gifts. And he says specifically, that well, it's previous verse. He says, you have not seen these. Yeah, previous verse. I shall now offer them all to you. Although you have not yet experienced these achievements, these achievements means that the topmost stage of Krishna consciousness, and with it the topmost fruits of austerity and meditation. In other words, not somewhere down here, but the topmost. You have not seen them, but I'm going to show them to you. Please look. And I shall offer them all to you. All of whatever he has attained, he's offering all to his wife. Because you are engaged in my service, now just look at them. I'm giving you the transcendental vision to see how nice they are. Something like Krishna saying to Arjuna, here's my universal form. Please behold. It's a wonderful mood of affection between Kardamuni and Devahuti. And he then, yesterday, he said, these gifts are rarely achieved by one who is proud of aristocracy and material possessions, because previously she had all of that. She was the daughter of Manu. She had opulence like nobody has opulence. She had aristocracy like nobody has aristocracy. She was at the top of the mountain. And she walked away from it. So she was detached from that and attached instead to being in service to an exalted soul who was a great devotee of the personality of Godhead on the platform of perfection. She also had a desire, which is going to be disclosed here, which was, you know, to have a son. She had that desire. And then, you know, one can ask the same question that we talked about previously. Is that a material or a spiritual desire? She's placing herself as not as qualified, less qualified than her husband. Now her husband very clearly is topmost. So it's an interesting subject. A material desire, a spiritual desire, like the position of Lord Brahma. If you read carefully Sri Brahma Samhita, after the mature realization of Lord Brahma, where he realizes his spiritual identity as an eternal maidservant of Krishna. Not like theoretically, but he realizes. And he offers these amazing sets of prayers, the Govinda prayers. After that, he still has a desire, a material desire. I mean, it's this interesting, is it a material desire or a spiritual desire? One can certainly, he identifies it as a material desire. Krishna, not Lord Vishnu, Krishna identifies it as a material desire. You know, just like male-female attraction, that's what this topic, it's a material desire. His desire was to create a universe. It's a material desire. It's in relation to the material energy. The argument on the other side is, it's the only reason there's that desire is his in service to the Supreme Lord. He doesn't have another motive than serving the Supreme Lord. In fact, the Lord infused him with his creative potency. Otherwise, you can't create a universe. I want to create a universe. So, it's the Lord's Srishti Shakti invested in this qualified living entity. And if there isn't a qualified living entity, the Lord does it himself sometimes. So he's an empowered, he's a very special person, Lord Brahma. He's in charge of the mode of passion. He's, you know, a guna avatar. And one can also represent that he's a Shaktivesh avatar. He's bearing the Lord's creative potency. So he's not an ordinary fellow like we are. And at the same time, there's this material, I want to create a universe desire. And he's worried about it. And he expresses it. Well, he didn't even have to express it. Lord Vishnu, or Lord Krishna says, I know that you're concerned, like we might be concerned, about having desires that are of this world, and are they going to interfere with our devotional service? And then the other way, if we just do devotional service, is that going to interfere with the performance of our duties in life? It's articulated explicitly in Bhaktisiddhanta's purport, text 57 of Brahma Samhita. And it's, you know, something that devotees kind of struggle with a little bit. You know, the balance notion. How do we balance between this and that? Krishna gives a perfect answer, obviously, to a perfect question that we may not even articulate so perfectly. But so Krishna articulates the question and then Krishna gives an answer. So if you want to know the answer to that question, read that section. It's very clear. So back to the forest where Kardamuni's hermitage is. Here's Kardamuni offering the topmost part of love of God to Devahuti, not the, you know, not the material ones. He's already like ruled that out. It's not, I'm not going to give you the material things, although, you know, that can be given. I'm going to give you the topmost thing. So anyway, we could. She's going to say, "I want a son." Here she is, you know, in this super elevated position with a super elevated person who is on the stage of perfection saying, I'm going to give you love of God. And her reply is, I want a son. Let's listen to the verses in Prabhupada's purport. Text 9. Kardamuni has finished speaking. Maitreya is now giving a narrative. Upon hearing the speaking of her husband, who excelled in knowledge of all kinds of transcendental science, innocent Devahuti was very satisfied. Her smiling face, shining with a slightly bashful glance, she spoke in a choked voice because of great humility and love. Purport. It is said that if one is already engaged in Krishna consciousness and is rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord, it can then be supposed that he has finished all the recommended courses of austerity, penance, religion, sacrifice, mystic yoga, and meditation. When you're on the top stair of the staircase, it's to be understood you've traversed the other steps that lead to the top step. And the benefits to be derived by each of those steps is included in the top step. That kind of an idea. He says it again, just expanded. Devahuti's husband was so expert in the transcendental science that there was nothing for him to argue about. He didn't lay it all out, he just, like, conclusion. And when she heard him speak, she was so confident that since he was very much advanced in devotional service, for he had already surpassed all transcendental educational activities. Again, mentioning the same, he was on the topmost, so he had traversed the others. She had no doubt about the gifts offered by her husband. Semicolon. She knew that he was expert in offering such gifts, and when she understood that he was offering the greatest gift, she was very satisfied. She was overwhelmed with ecstatic love. And therefore, she could not reply. Then, with faltering language, just like an attractive wife, she spoke the following words. Just a little further discussion on this. When you're on the topmost state platform, or when you're engaged in devotional service, the question sometimes arises, should we understand that devotees have literally done all those things, like lifetimes ago? We did this one and that one and the other one, and they became matured, and the fruits of those things came from those things, and now we're in devotional service, and so we have like a, you know, big treasury. Physically, we did those things, and the fruits of those things are with us. Does it mean that literally? Or does it mean that when one engages in devotional service, whatever it is that's to be derived from those things comes to that person? We don't need to make a separate endeavor to do those things. We don't need, like, severe austerities. We don't need the mechanical process of yoga and the mechanical process of meditation and so forth and so on, because within the process of devotional service itself, the fruits of those things are within the process of devotional service already. You understand the question? And the answer can be either one. That's the answer. Like, there's the staircase method and the elevator method. Prabhupada's example in New York is, if you want to go to the top of the Empire State Building, there's two methods. There's a staircase and there's an elevator. So you get to the top floor, and does it matter whether you want the staircase or the elevator? You're on the top floor. But better to take the elevator with these. You know. So when you do the elevator, so bhakti is the elevator method, and then the gradual is the other method. So with an act of kindness and mercy, were given the elevator method, where unqualified get on board, hit the button for the top floor, and up you go. And we're not qualified. You know, so engaged in devotional service, which is the topmost of activities, we still carry, not like they do some bad things, we still carry imperfection, and like a lack of refinement and lack of culture and lack of, you know, lots of things. Anger and lust and greed and, you know, yucky things in the heart while engaged in the topmost activity. So it's very important, I like speaking about this because it's very important, that devotees understand we're the recipients of mercy, so we have some, like, responsibility to the giver of that mercy, and that is to act, to be, not just external, to be, to receive the gift, that, you know, the qualification, driven by a mood of devotion, propelled by the mood of devotion, to act in a way that's representative of the teachers and the teachings. And so, not just, yay, I'm at the top, but qualifying oneself in devotion through gratitude and trying to please in service those deliverers of this wonderful process of devotional service. Recognize what it is that we've received, the extreme benediction that's been given to us, although we're not qualified, and strive to become qualified. Please don't forget that important element of bhakti. In devotion, not independent, so I can get recognition for being, like, you know, good, but in devotion for the pleasure of those who were the recipients of the mercy from. So, Devahuti is recognizing that attainment is there with her husband. He has all kinds of bounty, gifts to offer. He's offering the topmost love of God, surpassing all the other ones, giving her the greatest of all gifts, and she's confident. He knows what that is, he knows how to give it, he has it to give, and he's offering that to her. She's very confident in all of that, and now she's choked with emotion, wanting to express. She gathers herself, and now she's going to speak to her husband. Sri Devahuti said, text 10, "My dear husband, O best of the brahmanas, I know that you have achieved perfection and are the master of all the infallible mystic powers, because you are under the protection of Yogamaya, the transcendental nature. But you once made a promise that our bodily union should now fulfill, since children are a great quality for a chaste woman who has a glorious husband." It was way up there, and all of a sudden something happened. So, in this verse, text 10, and the previous verse, text 9, Yogamaya is mentioned. So it's there twice. Now, when we hear about Yogamaya, we hear the phrase, we're accustomed in ISKCON, to understand Yogamaya as the internal potency, the aspect of the internal potency by which Krishna conducts his pastimes. There's Mahamaya and there's Yogamaya. So, there's other refinements or subtleties of that term that are being presented here, and I'll just mention them. This still, it's, you know, the internal potency or the transcendental nature. The transcendental nature. So we're speaking about that realm. And in text 9, Maitreya is speaking about Kardama Muni as having contact or having accomplished fullness of the resource of Yogamaya. So it's not, it's within the realm of the transcendental potency, but it's being translated in the word for word Akila Yogamaya, all transcendental science. How it's translated in the verse, upon hearing the speaking of her husband, who excelled in knowledge of all kinds of transcendental science. So, along with, it's a nuance of Yogamaya. It's the internal potency, but then there's things that one can understand by the agency of the internal potency, like, you know, Krishna, or God, or Vishnu, or the spiritual world, and, you know, reality with a capital R, through the agency of Yogamaya. So he knew, he had knowledge and realization, Jnanam, Vijnanam, knowledge, and he had realization of spiritual reality. And so he was fully accomplished. Akila means all. Akila Yogamaya, all transcendental science, A to Z. And in text 10, the nuance is slightly different, at least it's being presented that way, as mystic powers. Amoga Yogamaya. Previous is Akila Yogamaya, and this is Amoga. So Akila is all, and Amoga is infallible, meaning there's nothing material that can check it. That's infallible. Like Krishna is infallible. Achyuta. He's infallible. He can't be checked. He doesn't make mistakes. He's infallible. And the Yogamaya potency, like Krishna, is infallible. And the gifts, or the opulences, or here specifically, the mystic powers that represent the internal potency. Krishna is Yogeshwara. He's the master of all mystic powers. Anything that a yogi can do that because Krishna can do it. We can't do anything that Krishna can't do, but Krishna can do anything. So yogis know how to do things that Krishna can do in a small way. They can lift something that's unlimitedly heavy that an ordinary person can't do. They can become small. They can become big. Mahima and anima. So Krishna is so big, he's Mahavishnu. From the pores of his body come universes. And at the same time, he's within every atom. So he's the bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest. So yogis can also become big or small. They can do because Krishna can do, and they get like a license or something. They become big or small. They get some empowerment. Now back to Kardava Muni. He's in contact with the transcendental potency. Here, the reference is Yogamaya. And so he has mystic powers, like amazing mystic powers. He's going to exhibit them, some of them. He cannot exhibit them, or he can exhibit them, or he cannot exhibit them, or at will. Of course, Krishna's sanction. But a great devotee, not just, you know, Kardamuni's got a special license and other transcendentalists don't. And transcendentalists get a license. They have the capacity. Like once Prabhupada was asked, Swamiji, do you have mystic powers? And have you exhibited mystic powers and something along that line? And Prabhupada gave, this is not verbatim, but something in this manner. Sanskrit Maharaj shared this once upon a time, that Prabhupada's reply was, a pure devotee, he didn't speak first person, it was third person, a pure devotee has, by Krishna's grace, has all mystic power. But a pure devotee doesn't exhibit those mystic powers because people will be enamored by the mystic power and not by the root, like the pure devotion. So they don't exhibit, commonly, they don't exhibit mystic power. Because worldly people will go, oh, I want some of that. You know, to do something amazing. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in meeting with the sannyasis in Varanasi, he exhibited his Brahman effulgence. And, you know, other times he did other things. He exhibited for a purpose, but it's not, he did that all the time. So he could do that all the time, walk around, check out my effulgence. you should you know, hear what I have to say, because I'm this effulgent personality. He didn't, because people would be attracted to the opulence or the power or the mysticism instead of bhakti. You follow? So Kardam, the statement is, Devahuti recognizes that Kardamuni has that. And she's not asking, can I have some of those mystic opulences, mystic powers? She's not asking for that. She's recognizing his qualification, again, as the previous verse, fully, so the essence is fully connected with the Lord's spiritual potency, which includes, a subset of which is all knowledge. He excelled in knowledge of all kinds of transcendental science. And it's Prabhupada's explanation. He, if one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, one is supposed to have finished all the recommended courses. Devahuti's husband was so expert in transcendental science that there was nothing for him to argue about. He had already surpassed all transcendental educational activities. She knew that. So that's this Yogamaya term can mean that, and it can mean possessing all mystic powers. But the essence is fully connected to the spiritual potency. So that's Kardama Muni's qualification. And I didn't read the purport, did I, for the second one? Here's the purport. It's short. Devahuti. Purport. Devahuti expressed her happiness by uttering the word Bhatta. Bhatta in the word for word means indeed. For she knew that her husband was in a highly elevated, transcendental position and was under the shelter of Yogamaya. But Prabhupada now goes into Yogamaya-Mahamaya distinction. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, those who are great souls, Mahatmas, are not under the control of the material energy. The Supreme Lord has two energies, material and spiritual. The living entities are marginal energy. As marginal energy, a person may be under the control of the material energy or the spiritual energy, Yogamaya. Kardamuni was a great soul, and therefore he was under the spiritual energy, which means that he was directly connected with the Supreme Lord. That's the Yogamaya reference. She recognized that capacity in her husband. The symptom of this is Krishna consciousness, comma, constant engagement in devotional service, like Krishna says multiple times in Bhagavad Gita. Avyabhichari bhakti, undivided devotion, exhibited in the form of service. It's not just like busy, busy, busy. It's bhakti, bhakti, bhakti. In all circumstances, even the challenging ones, and even the happy ones, it's just bhakti in all circumstances. This was known to Devahuti, yet she was anxious to have a son. So here's like this other curious element. By bodily union with the sage, she reminded her husband of his promise to her parents, going back to the previous chapter. Quote, "I will remain only until the time of Devahuti's pregnancy," unquote. She reminded him that for a chaste woman to have a son by a great personality is most glorious. She wanted to be pregnant, and she prayed for that. The word stri means, quote, expansion. By bodily union with husband and wife, their qualities are expanded. Children born of good parents are expansions of the parents' personal qualifications. Both Kardamuni and Devahuti were spiritually enlightened. Therefore, she desired from the beginning that first she be pregnant and then she be empowered with the achievement of God's grace and love of God. For a woman, it is a great ambition to have a son of the same quality as a highly qualified husband. Since she had the opportunity to have Kardamuni as her husband, she also desired to have a child by bodily union. End of purport. So, material or spiritual? One could make an argument on both sides because of her position. Then what about us, material or spiritual? Then it depends on consciousness. It's not the activity itself. So there was Devahuti before she was married. There's Devahuti now before there's a child. And there's Devahuti after Kapila Deva is born and Kardamuni leaves. And it's not stagnant, it's not static, it's dynamic. Even for such personalities as Devahuti, what to speak of ourselves? And that is, let's just take, through the association of Kardamuni, who was, and she recognized that he was, and her heart was open to receive that which was the gift from her good husband of love of God. She had the desire to serve a qualified husband. She also had the desire to have a son. Now, there's a transcendental feature that is as service to Krishna or to God, as service to God, to bring into this world a qualified soul that can represent, replicate, exhibit the good qualities of exalted parents. Service to the personality of Godhead. Not so dissimilar from Brahma wishing to create a universe in service to the personality of Godhead. But there's a material element or component in that desire of Lord Brahma expressed within Brahma Samhita and within Devahuti also. So specifically, he's saying, I want to give you love of God. And she's saying, she wanted to become first pregnant and then be empowered with the achievement of God's grace and love of God. So one can, that sounds like this is some strength on the side of, well, it was that she still had material desire. Now, then it gets into this like really subtle analysis that our acharyas offer us, where there are positions where there's exclusive devotion and there's that is to say there is nothing material, and that there's a state that's just before that. And this appears to be one of those. I forget those terminologies. It's one of those. So there's progression in Devahuti's qualification or consciousness. And so, you know, that's not where we are. We're you know, much further down in this trajectory of spiritual evolution. But the encouragement for us is look to the spiritual side, not just the fulfillment of, oh, the dovetail idea. This fits with something that works for Krishna, so now it's authorized. What we should be doing is looking to what is pleasing to Krishna with self-honesty, recognizing there's something over here on the material side, like, you know, I like music. And so Krishna likes music, but it's bona fide. It's just like, I like music, and by the way, Krishna happens to like it too. It's more, here's something, a gift and an inclination, and it's pleasing to Krishna. Let me learn how to utilize this inclination that I have in such ways pleasing to Krishna. The bhakti principle is where our attention should go while utilizing things, and then it's elevating. It's more elevating. It's elevating anyways because Krishna is in the picture, as opposed to just doing music and all that, you know, the secular idea of religion. There's the worldly part of my life, and then there's the religious part of my life, and I separate the two. Ours is not a secular way of life or teaching. It's a devotional way of life. So this devotional way of life is recognizing with self-honesty, I'm not purified. I wish to become purified, and the way to become purified is amplifying the bhakti principle as I apply myself in life. That's the lesson. And any comments or questions, please? Yes?
Thank you, Maharaj. In this text, prior to this text, Kadamba Muni is telling the Devahuti that I'll give this amazing gift to you. So, as I've understood, devotional service it's like a gradual process. So, what does he mean when he says that even though she has been serving him for so long, that I'll give you this gift now, I'll give you this amazing gift? Is that like the devotional service, that the love of God is like an object of people's think more of that?
Good question. I thought about that when reading it. There's another part to the question, and that is, besides gradual versus, you know, a big down dump of mercy, isn't it the nature of a great soul like Kardama Muni to just to be in the transcendental position, wishing all the while to all, what to speak of someone so dear as one's spouse, to give that gift, you know, from the very beginning? And, you know, or is it, I mean, that it seems like that's the picture, as opposed to, like, you've got it locked up, and you got the key, and you're, like, you know, waiting to see, should I give it or not? It's more, our picture is being munificent, wishing to give at all times, at all stages. That was more how I was thinking, actually, of this. What does it mean to give the gift of love of God? Is it a sudden thing, or, you know, a qualified thing? And I don't have, like, a definitive answer, to be honest. And my thought was, it's more a statement of Karuni's recognition of Devahuti's, like an acknowledgement of something that already exists, which is her qualification. And I wish to give you all of what I have, like, you know, here it is. But the juncture point, what's going to happen is, as he had a desire to have the Supreme Lord as his son, we'll call it Vatsalya Rasa, he recognizes that she has also had that desire, and prior to just producing a son, they were further and further and further and further and further qualifying themselves to be in that position where they would have a qualified son. And he is going to now exhibit, instead of the forest situation of austerities of a brahmana, he's going to manifest this mystic city, flying city with palace and parks and, you know, stuff, where it would be more suitable, in one sense, more suitable for the life of producing children for a qualified person, and the daughters, and then Kapila Dev. So the juncture is that, the exhibition of that, making that arrangement. So she's expressing, I want a son. He's also understanding, he wants a son, she wants a son. Now I'm going to make that arrangement for the fulfillment of that desire. It's more, this is my understanding, and reflecting on this question. It's not like a sudden, it's night, and now all of a sudden it's daytime. Not like that. I haven't given you love of God, and now I'm going to give you love of God. It's not like that. But rather, the devotional service is the essence of love of God, and to fulfill the desire that you and I have, that there be a son, now let's enter into that phase of our relationship, husband and wife. The fulfillment of that desire to serve the Supreme Lord as our son. It doesn't say that in our commentary, so I'm just, you know, intuitively understanding by principle. It is a gradual, and it's not he was withholding something. Now we decided, okay, I guess I'll give it to you. It's just a phase of their dealings and it's going to undergo a shift, preparing and then performing. Okay. Something else? Yes.
Our own spiritual desires, Maharaj, are they coming from someone having given them to us, or are we then put in association of someone that can give them to us based on an inherent dormant desire?
Well, let me ask for some clarification on your question. When we're speaking of desire, are we speaking of fulfillment of desire? In your question, where do spiritual desires come from? Is your where you started, and then it went to the fulfillment of.
The fulfillment of them. So
even to have spirit. Let's do this desire part.
The first one I'm more interested.
Okay,
in.
Me too. It's not one or the other. It's both. Meaning. Dormant, there's the seed of love of God. And it just will remain dormant. Now supposing over a period of time the circumstances of life are such that we desire to come more in touch with and awaken to that capacity for love of God. Where does that come from? Bhakti, so how does bhakti begin? And we know that bhakti begins by association with one who is carrying bhakti. Otherwise, you know, it's speculative and imaginative, and it's not really bhakti. So it requires association. At the same time, then there must also be, for those spiritual desires to mature, there must be some effort on our part. Because someone, evidence of that is, one could have the association of a Mahabhagavata, and nothing really happens. Yeah, perhaps some of you I've met people that met Prabhupada, and they say, I was in Bombay at an Ayurvedic clinic, and I met some gentleman who said, I met Swamiji. You know, and I was thinking, you know, well, what happened with that? It's now like, you know, I met Swamiji, that's like it, that's as far as it went. And he was saying, you know, I could understand that he was a special personality. I forget the words that he used, but he wasn't an ordinary personality. Okay, and then what? Well, he wasn't, that's how far it went. So, there's something on our side, in addition to receiving association, there's something we do. Like, strive to receive that which... So a beginning of striving to receive is just to appreciate. That's a beginning. It's not like a zero. One of Prabhupada's disciples was named Madhusudana. And nice devotee. And I met his mother twice. And two of her sons became devotees, Prabhupada's disciples. And she had Prabhupada's association. And when I met her both times, she just like this smile and radiance and joy. And he was such a nice man. That's as far as it went. He was so nice. Like she just, that's how, what she appreciated. Like Sally Agarwal. He was so lovely. No sadhana, no devotional service, but, you know, some appreciation. And that's the beginning. So, but then there's, in addition to the beginning, then there's, okay, now appreciation, what do you do with that? So it's both association and something that we do. We cultivate. We according, properly, according to guidance of Scripture and teachers and teachings, and we cultivate. If we don't have that reference of according to Scripture and guidance of qualified persons, we can take that inspiration and go off and do some cuckoo thing. It happens. People go off and do some cuckoo thing. I'm inspired. Under proper guidance. That's so. Continue to receive the mercy and continue to make some effort. Those two things are required. That's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's teachings. Both are required. Mercy, kripa, Krishna kripa, and abhyasa. Put the two together, something nice happens. Desire, on the desire side, and then it's up to Krishna how he wants to move that. And the results side, it's up to him. Something else? Yes.
In your discourse, you mentioned it's consciousness that matters instead of the activity.
Well, it's not like activity is zero, but consciousness is what drives activity, yeah.
So, but in the beginning stages, like we are, hardly there's any consciousness to really serve Krishna.
There's got to be something. Got to be something.
Not at all.
No. There's got to be something. I'm sorry.
So is it still...
Like, let's say a child. What does a child know? What's the consciousness of a child when they dance in kirtan?
The innocence is there.
Okay.
There's no,
they're imitating what the adults are doing, and they're feeling something, and they're expressing that something. But there's something. And the qualification of the parents is that they take that childhood innocence and connect it with Krishna. Because otherwise it can be, doop-de-doop-de-doop music, and they're dancing to that. Or whatever. So, there's, the mercy and something. There's something. Otherwise, we'd be somewhere else doing something else. There's something. However modest. It has to be. Here's Rupa Goswami. Adau Shraddha. It has to be. Even, however tiny.
But that mercy of the Vaishnavas or the spiritual master to engage that person in devotional service, isn't that the gift?
Of course.
That is the gift.
This is his question. Where does that spiritual... It's both. It's not like only this or only that. It's both. It starts with, Rupa Goswami says, does it start with Sadhu Sangha or does it start with Adau Shraddha? You know the answer.
Shraddha is just curiosity part or just Shraddha?
That's a beginning. Sure, that's a beginning. What does Krishna say? There's four types of people. Some are just curious. There's some people that get association and they become blasphemous. Come on. Let go of your doubt. There's something. It's the seed. And it's then association. And then? Okay. There's something. Even, we're unconscious. Or, very, very, very feeble in Krishna consciousness. There's something. And that's important. And it's to be respected, even in the most neophyte of exhibitions of devotional service. It's glorious. and thus devotional service has begun. Here's the Prabhupada story. 26 Second Avenue, class is going on. You've been in 26 Second Avenue? So at the far end is the door, and then here's Prabhupada, and in the door comes a drunkard. And he's, you know, weaving his way through the devotees, and he goes into the bathroom and he puts some toilet paper in the back of the toilet bowl and staggers back out. And the devotees expected Prabhupada to comment on just the, you know, behavior of a drunkard. Prabhupada said, "This is very glorious. His devotional service has begun."
So that is agyatsukriti or devotional service.
He wasn't thinking I'm doing this for Krishna. He just likes, for whatever the reason, whatever, they fed me, or they smiled, or they spoke nicely instead of like you're a bum, or whatever it was that moved him, it was devotional service. And that started with some seed and then some association, and now he's doing some service. Very, you know, his devotional service has begun. It began with some appreciation of some kind. Who knows what that was? Okay? Yes.
We try to perform devotional service. We have a sincere desire to do that, but sometimes, you know, because of the influence by the modes of material nature, it's getting hampered one way or another.
Welcome to the club. There are lots of members of that club.
It's because of this challenge, you know, like we find, okay, like because of the material modes influence thing, find it's a difficulty to do the services here. So do in the spiritual world, they have the same kind of challenges?
No modes of nature challenges. There may be impediments of other kinds. This is a reflection of that, perverted reflection of that. So there can be impediments. And then, you know, facing impediments, what do? Very deeply they call for Krishna. By Yoga Maya, the impediments are created, so their dependence upon Krishna intensifies. That's what happens. So we're just in, you know, in baby school, and we're learning how to, you know, address impediments that are largely our own contaminations, although they may look like an external impediment.
Think, okay, I wouldn't have done this, and maybe like I should have made an alternative. You know, like I really call for help.
Good.
So that means I really feel, am I really serving Krishna, or I'm taking service from Krishna like that? So how do I really?
Well, we're dependent, so we do take service from Krishna. You can't serve without taking service from Krishna. You can't do anything without the ability being given to you by Krishna. So it's. That's just reality. Now, what's the mindset or the mood? I don't want to take from Krishna, but I can't do anything unless Krishna gives his mercy. So we appeal to Krishna's mercy. It's not like making him our servant. It's a relationship. We're the servant. And he is the bestower of that which allows the service. And it's in his hand. So it's the mood. And the concern is a good concern. I don't want to make Krishna my servant. At the same time, there's the reality that we are the servant and we're dependent upon the master. So let your attention go to the mood of service and that which is essential for the service is, let's say, spiritual strength and purity of purpose, even when the modes are acting. I'm being moved this, so you're in a boat and the wind is moving the boat this way and moving the boat that way and the waves are churning, but you know, you have to You have to get from where you are to the destination. So you're depending upon Krishna for the intelligence, for the strength, for the courage, for the doing the proper things in the proper way. So we're dependent. It's not like Krishna, you're making Krishna your servant. You're in the servant position. And Krishna is the bestower of the service and the capacity to do the service. It's not making him your servant by thinking that way. Last question because of time. Last question because of time.
Recently, actually, we were discussing on Mahaprabhu delivering the entire universe on the request of Vasudeva Gata.
Yeah.
Then one devotee asked, Mahaprabhu is the most magnanimous and beneficent. Why did he deliver the universe only on the request of Vasudeva Gata? Why not all the universes?
He reciprocates with it. The answer to that is, he's giving us something to do. That's Prabhupada's answer to that question. Not specifically that question, but like that question. He gives something to us to do. It's relationship. He wants, but he's reciprocating with his devotees. He wants every town and village. So why doesn't he just like, boom, every town and village? Yeah? Okay, we'll let you go.
So, just to expand upon the last question, it sounds a bit counterintuitive, but something like abhyasa can generate desire, abhyasa kripa. It sounds more like, isn't the desire supposed to be already dormant?
Yes, it doesn't generate, it awakens. And expands.
So versus like, if it was something mundane, in that case, no matter how much abhyasa you do, you would like, let's just say you want to learn how to play the piano, then no matter how much you practice, it never creates a natural desire because it's not anything new. Versus...
Yeah, there's a distinction between the internal and the external potency. Spiritual desire, that was the question, not piano playing. But spiritual desire is something that's internal. Piano playing is not something internal.
So is this that the desire to serve Krishna is strong within the beginning?
Yes.
And the process of abhyasa and kripa is...
Awakens it.
Okay.
It's dormant, as you said, and awakens, and matures, and develops, and becomes glorious. And there's another, you know, abhyasa can be, you practice piano, and there are people that, you know, they're like, superb. They probably play piano in their sleep because they practice and practice and practice and practice and practice and practice and practice, and it's like in their system, play piano or whatever. And that's mechanical, and you practice in a mechanical way and it just like drills into the system. Then you become good at something. Whatever. But this is now where the question, his question was spiritual desire. It's already there. It just has to be awakened. And the association is imperative, not optional.
So you can't do it either, you have to.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. I'll just get association. And it's going to happen. That's, you know, Krishna's my servant. I'll just lie in a hammock and sip lemonade and Krishna's going to make me a pure devotee by sending, you know, I'll listen to Prabhupada lectures in kirtan. There's some endeavor. Okay, thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada ki jai.